We're gonna skate to one song only.
Talk real sports. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, one third of the illustrious three-man booth. Allow me to introduce you to the rest of the fellas. I have my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
We shook up the world. We shook up the world.
Yeah, it's been crazy fantasy season for me. But when all the smoke clears, I find myself sitting in the championship game. I know Ray will join us later on and he'll have his own analysis of what happened. But just put it like this, this is one of those thorough first-round beatdowns. He's shocked. He's still trying to figure out what's going on. I'm glad to be on with y'all tonight. I'm glad to have my swagger back.
Swagger intact, baby. And then I also have, rounding out the three-man booth, CLT Sports PhD. What it do?
I'm feeling impotent over here. Made the playoffs in both my fantasy leagues, was out in the first round in both leagues. Want to give a shout-out again to our fantasy guru, Eric Hamilton. Got a lot of good feedback. His Seattle Seahawks pick for the defense, that tip got at least three or four of the listeners in to the playoffs and still have them going. But again,
yeah, they put up 30 points last week, 30 fantasy points in one of my leagues.
Yeah. And our guru, you know, following through, put up 319 points in our league, which is by far about 50 points higher than what anybody else had did all year. So shout out to him. And again, I'm just on the sidelines. You know, I'm sitting there. I'm not really upset at the coach for not putting me in because I know why I'm on the sidelines. So I'm just kind of indifferent there.
Well, you know, this is your experience right here, Phil.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
That's it right there. I myself am also in a championship game. I was a poor performance by the Pittsburgh Steelers defense away from being in two championship games, but. It is what it is. It happens. You know, I needed 14 points. They gave me one. So that's how it goes. So, you know, the fantasy football season is wrapping up. We got a jam-packed show today. First in the funky editorial, we are going to get into the Indianapolis Colts. They finally got their first win this past week. Looks like they are front runners to secure the number one pick in next spring's draft, which – more likely will be Andrew Luck. If you're the Colts, what do you do at this point? We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about the Colts' options. And then also, we're going to look at our crystal ball. We're all going to put on our Negro Diamonds turbans, and we're going to try to figure out, well, how does Andrew Luck project? And is he even the best quarterback? And will he even have the best career out of the quarterbacks in this draft? You know, I know he's viewed as a sure thing, but there have been some other sure things that haven't panned out. So after that, we'll get into D. Wills, 20 through 11. Now as we start to creep into that top 10, tonight's going to be a hell of a conversation as we get into this 20 through 11 for each of us as we go through our NBA top 50s and we start to wind that down as we get closer to the start of the season. Then we got our five on the black-hand side. We're going to get into the NBA free agency trades. We're going to make some predictions. We're going to talk about MVP, most improved breakout players, and, you know, give you our pecking order playoff teams, pick who we think is going to win the East and the West and play in the title. So we're going to go through some predictions there. We got our pick six, and then we got our Resistance Digital. We got a sponsor. Yeah, we got a sponsor. Yeah, what y'all think about that? We coming up in the world. We got a sponsor.
Yes!
We got a sponsor. Resistance Digital is sponsoring our segment, Dog of the Week. So we're going to go into that as we close out the show. So that's the lineup for you. If you want to get on at any time, feel free to call in. The number is 1-347-989-0844. That is 1-347-989-0844. Call in. Get on with the real sports guys. Hold us down for the next 2 hours, all right, like we always do about this time. So let's go ahead and get it going as we jump into the funky editorial.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say.
Yes,
shall we say it, y'all?
Yes,
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
Coleman,
Ryan, sit.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
But now, I do, before we get into the funky editorial, I do want to give some props. All right, I want to give some proper due to my man, PhD. He held it down today. You know, I was at a conference or whatever, a little day away training. So I couldn't get the rundown out, and my man stepped up in the pinch. Stepped up in the pinch. You know, Frank Reich did quarterback us to a victory. And I think we got a banging show lined up. So, you know.
That's right.
He definitely gets one of these.
We need more dogs.
Yeah, we need more dogs. We need more dogs like PhD holding us down. All right, so let's get into this funky editorial real quick. Now, Indianapolis Colts, you know, Peyton Manning got injured, had neck surgery at the end of last season. It was viewed as a small injury, something that he should have recovered from pretty quickly. Then the lockout hit. With that, Peyton lost access to the team doctors. Without access to the team doctors, it seems that there may have been some mishandling of the injury. Maybe Peyton didn't receive as high a level of treatment as he would have if he were able to access the team physicians. Either way, it took a lot longer to heal than they thought as the lockout ended and the season began approaching. It still seemed like there was a lot of optimism around the injury, and that Peyton would recover fairly quickly, maybe miss 2 or 3 games, and then be back on the field for the start of the season. Again, as training camp went on, as they played the preseason games, it became more and more evident that the injury was not healing as it should, and that Peyton may have to sit out an extended period of time. At first, it was thought, you know, maybe he'd be out until December. Then, you know, they got a second opinion, a third opinion, and it was ultimately deemed that it'd be best that he sit out the entire season this year. So with that, the Indianapolis Colts had a situation on their hands. There's no quarterback in the NFL whose team depends on them more than the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning makes their offense go. He's the trigger man behind it. He's calling plays at the line of scrimmage. He's making a lot of reads and doing a lot of things at the line of scrimmage for that team to get those guys lined up in the right places. And then he's executing, you know. He's executing and making things happen. So the Colts lost that. And with that, they lost all hope and swagger, all right, because these boys came out the gate and sucked. I mean, all pro players, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, Dwight Freeney, all right, all pro guys look like second stringers. The Colts lost their first 11 to 12 games. They finally got their first win this past week. So they have one win. Looks like they're going to finish the season at 1-15, or 2-14 at best, and ultimately wind up with the first pick in the draft. Now, this year in particular, that means a lot. Some years, you go into the draft not quite knowing who the first pick will be. This year, I think the consensus is that the first pick will be Stanford quarterback Andrew Luck. Now, the conundrum that Bill Polian, and Jim Irsay and the Colts ownership have on their hands is that Andrew Luck happens to play the same position as their other franchise player, Peyton Manning. So now they have to figure out whether or not they're going to keep Peyton or draft Andrew Luck. Or do they keep both? I'm going to throw that out to the other two-thirds of the three-man booth and get their opinions on it, and we're going to have a nice, good conversation about this. So, PhD, what do you think? You're the Indianapolis Colts. You're Bill Polian. How do you handle the situation?
I think it's somewhat of a blessing that they kind of got a preview of what life can possibly be without Peyton Manning. Similar to what the Cleveland Cavs went through last year without LeBron, it was horrible. And just a side note, you said earlier that we all thought he'd just be out a few games. I picked up Peyton Manning third round in my fantasy draft, and I thought I was John Concak. I was stealing money. You know, I just knew that this was going to pay off. But anyway, I digress. All right, I'm back. So I think it's pretty cut and clear for the Colts. You need to do what's best for the organization and worry less about Peyton Manning's feelings and what potentially he may be able to come back as. I think you take Andrew Luck. I think the big decision is, do you move Peyton Manning, try to get some assets in return, or do you keep Peyton Manning around in hopes that you can bring Andrew Luck around slowly? Then if Peyton's not there, the pressure is going to be on Andrew to start either day one or at some point during that first season. I don't think that what happened in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers sitting for a couple of years, I just don't think that's going to happen again in the near future. I think those are very, very unique circumstances. And the biggest thing, I think Aaron Rodgers, you know, I thought so much of him in terms of how he just kind of sat quietly and waited his turn without, causing a lot of ripples. I don't see that happening with Andrew Luck. Personally, I think that the Colts will move Peyton along. I think Peyton wants to be in a place where he's wanted and where people know that he's going to be the guy for at least another couple of years. So that's my take on what the Colts should do.
D. Wills, what say you?
Well, D.L. Epstein said as he was coming on with the Cubs head of all everything for the Cubs, he basically said you don't pay for past performance. So I think part of it is you can't, and this is back to what Bill just said, is that you can't base everything on the legacy of Peyton. You have to base it on the future. We've seen too many examples in professional sports where you let the legend basically keep you from progressing. And the teams that have done really well with that in transition and just been able to make a tough decision, like when they went from Montana to Young, and even from Favre to Aaron Rodgers, you have a little bit of struggle, but then you go. Now you can do that a couple different ways. You can draft Luck, keep Peyton on, and know that it really define his organization what that time doesn't look like. We look at about 3-year window, and then we look into move. You can do it that way. You can shop him and get the Minnesota deal for Herschel Walker, get everything back, and do that. The one problem you have with that is that you haven't been able to get him on the field enough to entice folks to give you enough. So I think that's the part that people are missing. The fact that he's not going to play any snaps this year hurts your trade value. Because you don't know what you're getting. And so you almost need to have him play at least one season with you and make something happen with the idea that you can trade him. I mean, those are the kind of things you have to think about. But I don't have a problem with just drafting and sitting Luck. I don't see Luck as the kind of kid that's going to say anything. His dad, he's well-groomed. He knows what to say in the right place. If you watch his interviews, he'll know what to say. He knows his time is going to come. So I don't see Luck. I see Luck doing exactly what Rodgers did. I see Luck understanding it. I see Luck appreciating the opportunity to learn from Peyton. I don't see him coming in chirping. So I think Indianapolis is actually in the best position it could be, but they have to clearly demonstrate to everybody involved, only has to do with that he's in charge, that he's going to make the decision on this, and he's going to make the decision that's best for the organization.
Two interesting takes. I think if I'm Indianapolis, I trade the pick. I keep Peyton Manning. I trade the pick. Again, luck is a hell of a talent. Peyton's a proven commodity. If they take both, then Peyton. Then luck can learn from Peyton. If they trade it, because that roster actually needs a lot. And even with Andrew Luck, I still think it'll be quite a while before that team is competitive again. Even if they move Peyton, I think moving this pick, they could set themselves up to get first round picks for the next 2 or 3 years from a team who is in dire need of a player like Andrew Luck. You know, if you look at a team like Buffalo, a franchise that is dying for some star power, who are some other teams that Miami could definitely use a quarterback. I use it to leverage some more picks out of people and see if I can't get a first rounder this year, first rounder next year, and maybe a second or third rounder. Because what Indianapolis is at a point where they need to replenish their roster with young talent. They need to get some more young talent in the pipeline and begin to develop from there. Now, if they can score, again, wherever Andrew Luck winds up going, he's going to play right away. The team is probably not going to be that great. So the pick the next year is probably going to be a top 10 pick, which I think, again, then I go and get my quarterback. You know, depending, and who knows who that'll be, but maybe then I go get my quarterback. And then let that person be groomed behind Peyton. But I use the fact that Andrew Luck is viewed as a can't miss prospect, and I ride out Peyton for a little bit longer. Peyton still got, you know, yes, Peyton is injured, but Peyton still got 4 or 5 years left in him as a top quarterback, as a good quarterback in this league. He's got about 4 or 5 years, I would say, at least 3 of those years. He'll still be one of the top 3 quarterbacks, at least. Worst case scenario, 3 of those years he's one of the top quarterbacks, and he's one of the top 3 quarterbacks in the league. And then the last 2 years, he starts to tail off a little bit. But
the question I'd ask you is that: I mean, you can put this. We've seen this movie, Dan Marino. Historically, those top 2 or 3 picks. And I know they say it's 50-50, but you got to get a star. And so I agree with your strategy, and part of it might be, if you're going to do it that way, is how you grade all the other quarterbacks. Because everybody might be thinking Luck is so far ahead of it, but you might grade and look at the other quarterbacks and say, yeah, he's at the top, but this is a really good quarterback draft, and these other folks aren't that much different than him. You know what I'm saying?
You could get a good
– I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks going to be in this draft that they all declare. And so – part of your strategy could work if they're sitting there grading and say, yeah, Luck is a superstar. But to tell you the truth, he's not that much. I'm looking at the way the game is going, and RG3 might not be a bad. I like his delivery. Or you start to look at some of these other quarterbacks.
Barkley. You know, there are quite a few quarterbacks out there who I think they could take and still, again, have them sit behind Peyton and still make that transition while still replenishing the rest of their roster. And bolstering the rest of their roster, because it doesn't matter who they get in, whether it's Peyton or whether it's Luck, that team is awful right now. I mean, Peyton never played defense. If I'm correct,
yep.
Peyton never took any snaps on D, and that D's weak as hell.
But the difference is that defense was designed to play with elite. So what Peyton always did is put pressure on the other offense to keep up and allow that defense to play fast.
Mm-hmm.
Now the offense is not putting any pressure on anybody to score, now they're vulnerable. They're not set up to do the kind of things that Baltimore got to do, or the Steelers, or San Francisco, you know, where they can get in and win. They're not built to win 9-6 games. They built to win, you know, 35-31 type games and get one or two stops with sacks down the stretch. And they don't, you know, they don't. That's where he allowed. That's where he helped the defense, because he put so much pressure on the other offense to do things to take them out of what they do. So that's what Peyton asked of the game. And like you know, they got to change that defense over. They got to do some things to make that defense a more balanced. Even as Peyton gets older, they got to make that defense a more balanced. The defense has got to step up and take a bigger share than it's taken historically, even if Peyton comes back. They're going to have to do it differently on defense.
Yeah, and that's where I think they need it. And that's why I think they need to try and get some young talent in the pipeline with that particular program, because there isn't a whole lot there. It's an aging roster. It's a win-now roster that ain't winning. So, to me, there's definitely some work to be done.
I saw an old game on NFL Network this past week, and they showed Jim Kelly as a rookie or second-year player in the USFL. And I said to myself, this almost looks exactly like Andrew Luck right now. Young quarterback, making good decisions, very, very clutch. Decent athlete, not afraid to throw a long ball, and again, makes very good decisions. You know, if I have opportunity to draft somebody who I think would be like a Jim Kelly or even better, I'm taking them and forget everybody else. You know, Devon brings up a real good point in terms of trying to get max value out of Peyton Manning. That's the one thing I'm stuck on, you know. I just don't see it playing out well if you have both of these guys around. Again, maybe I'm wrong with Luck. I mean, Luck's given me no ammunition to say that he won't say the right things and, you know, kind of play his role and be patient. But in this day and age, everything has to play out so perfectly for that perception to stay true. And it may be things beyond his control. It could be things in terms of Peyton. Peyton may not be willing to, you know, keep the status quo and keep that perception up. Everything I know about Peyton Manning is that he's a big-time competitor. And I'm not sure if his pride, his ego, whatever you want to call it, is going to allow him to be in a place where, you know, he's kind of a bridge guy. He's doing what Hasselbeck is doing right now in Tennessee. We all know Locker is going to be taking over next season, the season after at the latest. I just don't see Peyton being that guy.
And that's why I think, again, because Peyton is arguably best quarterback ever. You can argue that. So,
absolutely.
I mean, whatever you get behind him, is it going to add up to what you got? And what you could have for another 5 years and still find a guy who can be a bridge just as good, could have just as much upside as the Andrew Luck, again, an RG3, Matt Barkley. All of these guys are projected as being good to great NFL quarterbacks. This is a really good year for quarterbacks. And so I use that to my advantage if I'm the Colts. I keep what I have, the known commodity I have, the guy who I know next year comes in and guarantees me 9 wins, at least. I keep that. I trade that number one pick, which is always a roll of the dice because it's the draft. I trade that number one pick, and I try and get some bodies to fill out the rest of my roster. And I try and get some bodies into my system, into my program, so that there can be some longevity within the team. People forget that the Green Bay Packers are the second youngest team in the NFL right now. Because they're always bringing in young bodies, whether it be undrafted free agents, whether it be rookies. They're always bringing in younger players who are hungry, who want to play, who aren't satisfied, who haven't got that first, second contract, who haven't got that first deal after their rookie deal. And if they build the program that way, that allows them to continue to win and continue to bring in talented players. And I think the Colts could set themselves up to begin to do that, to begin to keep bringing in talented players to develop that pipeline and really find, you know, a guy who may be second or third or fourth even in this quarterback class and develop him and have him learn under Peyton Manning. And he may come in and not be as great as Peyton Manning, but if he has a solid supporting cast around him, he doesn't have to be. So that'd be my strategy. That's how I go about it. Because I think Andrew Luck is going to be a great player. But again, is he going to be as good as Peyton Manning? That's the question. Is he going to be as good as Peyton Manning? If not, you keep Peyton for the next 5 years.
I mean, you got to say, I mean, if you look at college career and how they came out with probably about the equally same amount of hype in terms of their ability, how people described them. You know, when they were describing Luck, I was like, well, that's just how they described Peyton Manning coming out of Tennessee. Commanded offense, basically run it like coach on the field. You know, I mean, and Luck has been doing this with three tight ends, probably no receivers. So those are the kind of things you got to just take into the equation.
I think it's something really we need to, something very important we need to acknowledge is that the Colts are only one game ahead in this lottery for the first pick. They've got one win now. St. Louis has got two, and Minnesota's also has two. So how wild would this be if Minnesota messes around and gets this first pick? Or St. Louis. You know, that may be the better discussion. Based on what Sam Bradford did this year, if you're St. Louis, do you take this quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I say no. If I'm St. Louis, I don't take the quarterback. Because, again, you have Sam Bradford. You have $50 million invested in Sam Bradford at this point. That's a hell of a number to try and move. And maybe you do, because you do have $50 million invested in Sam Bradford, so you trade him. And you take you draft a rookie who has just as much upside for half the price. So maybe that's what you do instead. But it's definitely a conundrum for everybody involved.
That's right.
So Andrew Luck, you know, looking at the top prospects, QB prospects in this draft, I'm going to run them down real quick. Let me pull this up real quick.
I got them here in front of me.
All right, why don't you run through them real quick then?
Right now, Mel Kiper has quarterbacks in this order. He's got Andrew Luck, the top overall quarterback and top overall prospect. Matt Barkley as a sixth overall prospect and second quarterback. Robert Griffith III as a third overall quarterback, 12th overall prospect. Landry Jones at 16. And then he's got Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback at Texas A&M, right after him. Those are your top five overall quarterbacks.
And all projected in the first round, correct?
Yeah, based on his big board, even this last guy here, Tannehill, he's a 27th overall prospect. So one would think that he'd probably be late first, at the worst, early second round.
So yeah, I mean, that's so there are quite a few guys who you can get in this class. Who have the potential to be major contributors or potentially develop into good to better quarterbacks.
about Robert Griffin III, I mean, I'm impressed with his like what he brings to the table. But his running style and things that he does, you know, you just really question, based on his frame, will he be able to hold up? I think he has the ability to, I mean, right now I think he's a pretty good pocket passer. But if you were to draft a guy like that, I wonder exactly what would the expectations be. I mean, hopefully he'd get with a team that would ask him to do what his strengths are. And I've had a chance to watch him two or three times. He can move around, but, you know, I don't doubt he could do what Cam did this first year in the right situation.
You say you don't think he can do what Cam did?
I think he can.
Oh, you think he can?
Yeah, because I mean, if you look at what Cam did as a passer at Auburn, I think Roberts had more on his shoulders in terms of the passing game. Looking back now, we now see Cam could have done more as a pure passer. He just wasn't asked to. But I think Robert Griffin could come in and do, you know, I mean, what Cam's done or something close to it. Because I don't know if you can ask any quarterback to come in and perform at the level that Cam has, based on what Cam has around him right now.
I mean, he had the best rookie season of quarterback ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, RG3, he could come in and do the right thing. I think the biggest question has been they're trying to get a sense of his height. Is he tall enough? But I think, you know, I think we've seen enough examples of Drew Brees and quarterbacks like that suggest that you don't let that fool you. So I think he's a dynamic player that is kind of, you know, I think people are going to really take a look at, given what we've seen with Cam and with others. I think people are going to look and take a look at him, and he might be the kind of person that could be that flyer that you could get, you know, for a reasonable price. So I think you know, getting a chance to see him in his pro days and you know, get a chance to kind of see him work out a little bit, but just in the game, it's something you can tell. You see him play, you can tell he understands the game. Yeah, doesn't he want to be an attorney?
Who's that? RG?
Yeah, something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, right now he's already finished his bachelor's in political science, and he's in a master's program in communications right now.
Yeah, that's Steve Young.
He should pull a Russell Wilson and come on up this way. Come on, get that national title, RG3.
That's my sleeper right there.
So of these top four quarterbacks, let's rank them real quick. We got their rankings. Where are you guys ranking these guys? Between Luck, Barkley, RG3, who else is there? Landry Jones and Ryan Tannehill. Who? I know. D. Wills, you were really high on Landry Jones coming into the season. Are you still there with him?
Nah, I expected him to step up a little bit more in some big games, and he's disappointed me. You know, for me, I've liked the way, and I think we would be having a neck and neck discussion about Barkley and Luck if Barkley had a chance to play in a ball game. So I think, you know, the person that's kind of moving up my board is Barkley. I've watched him play some of these games down the stretch, and he's just been coming on and doing it in a situation where, you know, he hasn't had a lot of, you know, limelight and under, you know, the cloud and everything else. So I would say I like Luck and Barkley, much closer to Luck than most people want to put him. I think people are talking about it. I think Barkley is going to be, when we look back on it, I think we're going to like Barkley. You're not going to see much of a difference between the two careers. And then I like RG3 probably after that.
Okay. Phil T, where are you putting these guys as you start to look at these players as potential pros?
Sure. Now, Tannehill, I didn't get a chance to see him play really at all this year. So, unfortunately, for that reason, I'm not going to have much of an input on him. There's something about Robert Griffin's accuracy You know, the first couple of weeks of the season, he had this crazy statistic where he had more touchdown passes than incompletions. You know, and some of the naysayers will say, well, he throws a lot of short stuff. He shows, you know, he throws a lot of stuff behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, but he also puts it down the field pretty well. That accuracy, to me, you know, I would put him right in that cluster, as Devon said, with Matt Barkley, right behind Luck. Landry Jones, I was a little disappointed with him this year. The first couple of games I saw him play, he was very accurate. But against that Oklahoma State game, he just made some throws that kind of concerned me as a third-year starter. His completion percentage went down 12% this year, just right around 60%. So, you know, for those reasons, I'm a little bit concerned there because I think out of all the quarterbacks we're talking about, Landry Jones probably had the most around him in terms of receivers, in terms of talented receivers with Broyles and some of those other guys. I mean, Barkley had a lot around him as well, but you know, I think one can make the argument that Oklahoma's receiving core is probably the top in the country this year. So I was surprised that he wasn't able to do more with what he had this year. So I would go with RG3, Barkley, then Landry Jones, the top four after Luck.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you there. I still think Luck is the top prospect. I have RG3 second, in my opinion. I think his accuracy, with quarterbacks who lack height, accuracy is such a tremendous asset. When you look at a guy like Drew Brees and how his accuracy has really helped him survive in the NFL. So then you add in the mobility. If Mike Vick had the accuracy on a consistent basis that he had for much of last year, when Mike Vick has that accuracy, he's an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
And I think RG3 can have that kind of an impact even earlier in his career than Mike Vick did. And, you know, I think it took Mike the prison stint to kind of get it and realize that he needed to play the position a little bit differently and that he needed to approach the position a little bit differently. I don't think RG3 will need that. But what I will say is that I like him. I like him almost as much as I like Luck.
Wow.
And I also, yeah, and you know, I like Barkley next, and then Landry Jones. I have them kind of right in that same range. But I really do. I think RG3's got a ton of potential. His accuracy, I think, is what really impresses me. And you add that with the mobility, and I think you have the potential for a excellent weapon in a lot of different kinds of systems. So, I mean, you look at Tim Tebow. Yeah, first Tim Tebow mention. We're half hour in. Cut us some slack. All right. Look at Tim Tebow. Look at his accuracy, but it's his running ability that has allowed him to survive. RG3, I would argue, is a better runner than Tim Tebow. Now, Tebow has an interesting characteristic where he could take a pounding in a way no other quarterback who runs as much as he runs can because of the way he's built. I think when Tebow starts running, anybody's worried about him getting hurt. When Mike Vick runs, people worry about him getting hurt. When Aaron Rodgers runs, people worried about him taking a big hit. I never worry about Tebow taking a big hit. So, but Tebow is less accurate. Pretty, I would say they're similar. They have different styles of running, but I think they can be both as effective running the ball. But I think RG3 is a better passer, and you see with the proper game planning how much success Tebow has had. Even Big Ben, when he was younger, you know, his ability to extend plays and make plays happen. When he was younger, he had a ton of success. He was limited. They didn't give him a whole lot. They played a certain way, and they allowed him to be successful until he grew into a quarterback who can throw the ball around 40 times a game. He wasn't that right away. I would say RG3 is more accurate than Big Ben. He doesn't have Big Ben's size, but he's probably more elusive than Big Ben. He's definitely faster than Big Ben. So I like him a lot. I think he's got a, I think he's got the look of a guy who can make a big make some noise his first couple years in the league.
So, and he's a Baylor kid. He can pick up the information. He's gonna pick up the offense. He's gonna pick up the complexities. He just seems like the kind of kid that, you know, part of this being good at that level is your ability. We see with Dalton and some of these guys in Cam, they're just picking things up. You know, they can pick it up. You know, people question how quick Cam is going to pick things up. He's just picking things up. And I think he's going to – he's got that natural ability to pick stuff up. You can do some things with him. And he's got that leadership ability. So when you have to lead – when you lead a program like Baylor out into the national limelight, I mean, that takes a lot for you to help people believe when they haven't been able to believe.
Right.
That's one of the intangibles that you got to pay attention to. And I would add that, too, to the equation.
All right. So we're going to move on out of the funky editorial. And now we are going to get into D. Will's 20 through 11 of his NBA Top 50. Let's roll.
That's where we're hitting.
Bring it on.
We're in the mix about to bring it home. And as I do this, we do this on cue every week. Okay, about to say, my screen was freezing up. I don't know what it is about it, but we're ready to go. So we're going 20 to 11?
Yep. And hey, D,
I want winners.
That's right.
At 20, George Gervin, the Iceman, notorious for the finger roll, shaped many generations of folks in the 70s in the playground. Everybody broke their damn neck trying to copy George Gervin. Elvin Hayes, he was like the beast. These next two are just beasts. Elvin Hayes, Moses Malone, Fo-Fo-Fo. We wanted to do it in Fo-Fo-Fo, but we did it in Fo-Fi-Fo. My man, who I just impacted and loved, just watching him play, and I don't think gets enough credit, Isaiah Thomas. This is a man that scored 61 points in the finals, 1961 finals. Is considered one of the greatest just flat-out players and scorers. Didn't win enough rings, but he's one of those cats that he's an exception to the rule, Elgin Baylor. At 15... this is another folks that shaped my childhood, my favorite team growing up. The Doctor, Julius Erving. At 14, didn't like him, got to respect him. I know the game changer's going to be mad. Drove the truck, but he was the mailman. Did it on all ends, Karl Malone.
Boo! Boo!
The best big man we can say in recent times, they had changed recent defensive structure and rules for him. Now the PhD, I think he defended his dissertation this month, Shaquille O'Neal. And then the man, he's up higher, he's probably on my list than anybody else's list. You know, this is why I just don't do counting. I just know that this cat is great, and I just know why he belongs here, is Barkley. That round mound of rebound. And then the man who all the young players today are going to work on their game. They're going to him for advice. They're trying to gain some wisdom. The man known for the dream shake, Hakeem Olajuwon. We also knew him at Five Slamma Jamma. So that's my 20 through 11.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Devon, talk to me about Elvis. Elvin Hayes, his game, and compare him, if you can, even if it's bits and pieces of his game, to other cats in the more modern era.
Well, I mean, one of the things that it still stands, I mean, he's got the highest average for any NBA rookie. He averaged 28.4 and 17 rebounds in his rookie season. I mean, this cat... He's a lot like, when I watch him play, he's a lot like he was, that's why I got them both together. He was like that Moses who I felt like could step away a little bit more from the space on the floor. So if you ever had a chance to watch Moses Malone where he just cleaned up and could do it all, Elvin could step away a little bit more from the hoop and had a lot more to his game, even than Moses. But I think Moses just was such a dominating, intimidating figure. I gave him a little nod on that one. So that's a person to me that I look at and I say, you know, what's some of the similarities? More modern day, I'm trying to think of who got that kind of dog in their game right now down low. I can't even, from a skill set, I'm trying to think of even a modern day cat that got that skill set. I don't know, because part of it, I don't see anybody with that kind of dog in them down low that I can say has that kind of skill set in modern day. I think the closest that I would get to someone that might be close, but I don't know if they even would have that. I can't right now. I would. KG steps out a little bit more. KG steps out a little bit more on his range, but that kind of mentality that KG has and the kind of way he goes at people and the way he scores, you know, KG is probably closer than that, but KG plays a little bit more, I would say, away from the floor than Elvin did. There might be some listeners who might have another assessment on that.
Okay. Shaq at 14. Where'd you have Shaq?
I had Shaq at, now I'm going to put it back up here, at 13.
At 13?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't argue with that. I got him around the same spot. I mean, real similar. Now, there's a name I haven't heard yet. And I have to ask. Maybe I missed it. Did you rank Kobe yet?
No, I haven't ranked Kobe yet.
So Kobe's in your top 10?
Yep.
Because I'm going back through, I'm like, well, maybe I just missed it. maybe he said Kobe in the 20s, and I just missed it.
And I debated that. I had Kobe. I played with everything from Kobe from 15 to where I had him settle in. Ultimately on my sheet, but I Kobe was someone I kind of moved around a little bit, and then just kind of settled with him. I could see myself doing this list again. He might end up in a different spot, but I have Kobe a little bit higher.
Interesting. You know, we'll get into that when the time is appropriate. You got one coming with that one. I can't really argue with too much there. I will have to admit that last week I made a mistake. When I made my list, I skipped the number 26, so I ranked only 49 guys. So Barkley actually is number 20 on my list. So he starts my top 20. So just so y'all, when I go through it, y'all gonna hear his name again. If I was gonna throw somebody on the back end, probably be Nate Thurman. I learned a lot about Nate Thurman last week, so I throw him in at 50, even it all out.
Yeah, and Nate Thurman's somebody who could have been high on my list, and I still debate it. I mean, if I do this list again, he's someone I think I could we easily could debate and have a spot on all of our lists. Go ahead.
George Gervin was an interesting cat, and I think my brother's listening. I know he's a big George Gervin fan, Iceman. Marcus had George Gervin listed at 30. I had George Gervin at 33. You're bringing George Gervin to your top 20. Now, from what I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, Gervin didn't contribute much defensively, correct?
I mean, Gervin wasn't the greatest defender, but Gervin was what I would call such an impact on the game. And Gervin's what I call is a generational pick. So when y'all had him at where y'all had him at, actually I wasn't surprised y'all had him there. You know, but for anybody who grew up when I grew up, or up, my brother or older, or your brother, Gervin is, for us, in terms of the impact, in terms of just when he was on the court, the kind of guy that just commanded everything and owned it and had the respect of all of his peers generationally. You can't talk about anybody played around Jordan before, I mean, George Gervin before, wouldn't rank him as one of the top players of their generation. And so he's somebody that, you know, is I could see generationally would easily move either between, and some people might have him at 15. You get the right people arguing on the thing, versus you might have folks that might have him already pushed out to even 40 on the list. So for me, he's somebody, and I, you know, people that I felt like had an impact on me growing up and had were just a dominant force in the game. You know, everybody around him believed George Gervin was that guy. And part of it is hard to even judge him on the NBA because part of his career was in the ABA, but he was always a top dominant player.
Yeah, he was listed as on the All-NBA team, ABA team, one of the top five ABA players of all time.
All time.
He was off the first team All-NBA five times.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
So I think he's definitely someone that you view differently based on whether you had a chance to see him play. You can't name a kid that grew up when I grew up that didn't have George Gervin's poster. The sitting in the ice with the two balls. Listeners I'm talking to can tell you, they all got it. The ones in our generation, they know what that picture is. You can't that poster. You can't name too many kids that had it, didn't have it.
Share with me the difference between George Gervin and Carmelo Anthony.
That's a good question. What I would say is George had more ability, because George was a scorer, but George could set people up, assist. I think he was – Carmelo was explosive, but it's hard to explain how explosive Gervin was in a way, slashing to the hoop, controlling the game. I always felt like Gervin had more of control of the game than I would say Carmelo. So meaning controlling the flow of the game. In a way that Carmelo is, I think he's an incredible scorer and explosive, but I don't always think Carmelo's controlling the game. You understand where I'm coming from? It's not like he's setting the pace of the game in a way that I would say people who watch Gervin play, Gervin scored 50, but you wouldn't necessarily know he scored 50. Carmelo scored 50, and you know Carmelo scored 50. You understand where I'm coming from? And so I think that's the way Gervin played in a little bit, that he had, I felt like, a little bit more control of all elements of the game. A lot of things ran through him in a way that I felt like he controlled the game a lot more than I would say Carmelo. I think Carmelo is a very explosive scorer. I think when it's all said and done, I think people will rate Carmelo as one of the most explosive scorers. But I think that Gervin was not just an only explosive scorer, but I just felt like he had just more control of everything that was happening in the game related to his team.
The reason I ask is because their numbers are very comparable.
Yeah.
Gervin averaged 25 and 5 and 5 essentially throughout his career. And Carmelo's right around that. But he's got about 3 or 4 assists per game, you know, about 1 or 2 less than what Gervin had. Like one of the things that frustrates me about Carmelo's game sometimes is that he doesn't put in the deck enough in terms of getting to the rack and getting to the free throw line. Would you say Gervin did that more and better?
Gervin did that very well. I mean, that's what you talk about, the finger roll and all that. I mean, Gervin to slash. So not only he had range, but he could put it on the floor, and he was slashing. And that's part of the control. When he scored, he knew what to do and get to the basket. So he wasn't going to settle. Sometimes I see Carmelo settle versus Gervin didn't settle. Gervin got what he wanted when he needed it. So down the stretch, you're going to see him getting to the rack because he wanted to make sure he was getting close to the hoop, but he could still raise up on you. But he wasn't – Gervin scored the way you need to score in the situation more so. I never felt like he was selling for shots.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest things with Carmelo is that I agree with that assessment. Carmelo doesn't. I didn't get to see Gerv play like I wish I would have, but to me, Carmelo just doesn't have a tremendous impact on the pace of the game. And he doesn't have impact at both ends. Now, I know George doesn't have a tremendous reputation as far as being a two-way player because of the pace and back end. There were different expectations back then as far as being an offensive guy and a defensive guy. But
And the ABA was an up-and-down league. So that was part of its challenge to the NBA. So, I mean, that's what they were coming out. ABA was that was an up-and-down the court, up-and-down the floor league. That was part of the brand of the league, too, that they wanted people to get up and down the floor. And that was what the challenge was to the ABA. So it was part of what the league wanted to inspire in terms of the fanfare. So that's also a part of when you see some of these ABA players, part of what happened. So I wanted to make sure I made that point.
So Olajuwon, you had him two spaces ahead of O'Neal in six or seven spots ahead of Moses Malone. Talk to us about that.
For me, Olajuwon is – that's another – I mean, I think is one of the greatest skilled big men of all time. Played both ends of the floor, so controlled it on both ends of the floor. One of the things I think, reason why Shaq is where he is with me, is that Shaq never dominated rebounding-wise, if you think about it. I mean, Shaq was a good rebounder, but he never dominated. But Olajuwon dominated on both ends of the floor at a time when they had really good other big men. One of the things I was thinking about, even during that time, you had guys like Rick Smith. Think about that. You know what I'm saying? You had big men who had skill throughout the time that some of these guys that we're talking about played, particularly during that time. And Olajuwon was easily just one of the dominant players on both ends of the floor. I mean, and I really debated whether or not I was going to move him higher. You know, some people's list, he is higher. I just felt like this was probably the right spot given some of the other people that I got on the list a little bit higher than him. But I think for Shaquille, I think what he did better than Shaquille is that I think they both were champions, but I think he asserted himself a little bit more than Shaq did on both ends of the floor. And on the offensive end, I felt like his game evolved offensively in ways that I wish Shaq would have done, that I really liked about Olajuwon. I mean, you could put him out on the guard and you think he was at a disadvantage. Yeah, he gets called on a screen and roll out on the guard. I mean, most people who've seen Olajuwon play, you didn't think the guard had the advantage on Olajuwon. I mean, so he's just such a versatile big man.
All right. Okay, so we gonna keep it rolling. We're gonna get into some more lists later. That's a solid 20-11. I really can't argue with that. Again, I raised the people's eyebrows the fact that Kobe's in your top 10, but we'll talk about that when it's time. All right, we'll dig into that when it's time. So now we're gonna get into a little segment we like to call Five on the Black Hand Side. We take five topics and we go in real sports guy style and run you through it. So here we go.
Five on the Black Hand Side.
All right, here we go. Five on the Black Hand Side, NBA Preview Edition. This is where we make all our predictions about the upcoming NBA season. So first off, number one in the Five on the Black Hand Side, what team or teams have the ability to go from last year lottery to this year playoffs? Now, lottery teams from last year. We got the Nets, the Raptors, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Detroit Pistons, the Cavaliers, the Bobcats, Wizards, Jazz, Timberwolves, Suns, Warriors, Clippers, Kings, Rockets. D-Wills.
Well, the two teams in the West, I think there's several of these teams that I think have a chance that can make a But one is obvious, just because of the recent trade, is the Clippers. I just, you know, and I don't want to go into that too much, but I just think that with the addition of Paul and pretty Chauncey, solidifies some leadership on those young with those young folks around winning, and I think they're going to make a run, and we can get into them more. This is a team I was debating between a couple teams, but I'm going to take a flyer on this team. And the reason why I'm going to do this is, and I'm not even going to talk about the players, but I'm just going to talk about the coaches. Rick Adelman, who knows how to win. Anybody who's tracked his record knows how to win with Minnesota. Terry Porter, and then they got Jack Sigma. So then when you start looking at the players that Minnesota has and where they need to develop and grow, and you think about the type of folks that they have teaching and working with them, I think Minnesota has the ability to make a leap. So, you know, I had the Rockets I was looking at, but I really like – I'm taking a flyer on this. I think Minnesota with the acquisition of Williams in the trade, I think this kid is going to be flat-out player. I think Love takes it to another level. I haven't watched Rubio a little bit, and I think this kid's got a little bit of talent, but I think working with Porter and some other things, I think they're going to be all right. But I just like Minnesota taking a jump. I think taking a jump to the next level, I like them. And then in the East, I like the Bucks. And the reason why, if you look at the Bucks last year, they had injuries with Bogut and Jennings that really impacted them. And I just think that you know, if those two can have a healthy season, I think they're going to be really good. And then you add Steven Jackson. I call him the burglar. You know, just don't care. he just comes and steals the game away from you, the big shot. I love his – he has – that's the kind of guy that Scott Skiles likes. Just going to fight, be tenacious, going to fight. And then Mike Dunleavy. I think this is a good situation for Dunleavy, where he can – he's a good all-around player, but I think he's a glue player. And I think he'll be a good person to kind of settle in their lineup over the course of the season. I like the Bucks in the East to be a team that I think could make the playoffs.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I like, you know, I think the Clippers is a no-brainer, you know, Lob City. We all float in Lob City. That's my new mantra anytime anybody refers to the Clippers. They all float in Lob City, baby. They all float. I was watching last night, man. Chris Paul is like a kid in a candy store. You telling me I could just throw the ball anywhere near the rim, anywhere near the goal? And somebody going to come snatch it out the air and dunk it? Cool, I can live with that.
That was fun to me last night. I mean, that was just very exciting to see the Clippers. I mean, it was exciting. I mean,
some of the dunks, I was just, I hit you up, Phil, on that text. I'm like, oh, my goodness. It's like, call the police the way they dunking on these folks.
Chauncey is really going to be an understated piece here, because you think about it, just watching him last night play against Kobe, he can match up and hold his own against Kobe, who's going to be one of the bigger twos you're going to see in the league. I mean, this team, I mean, think about it. What two guards are better shooter than Billups, spot-up shooter? I mean, you might be able to list three or four or five, but not many more than that. You know, if you look at quality two guards, Chauncey probably is going to be a top 10 two guard right now. And if you really take a step back and see what he offers and what he brings to the table.
Agreed. Great pickup. Great move. That's going to be a team to watch. Again, the sooner they gel, you know, and again, early in the season, it's not going to quite be there. But once they gel, hot dogs. Them boys going to be bad. Live City all the way, baby. All right. And there's an interesting pick of the T-Wolves. The T-Wolves are an interesting team. They got a lot of young talent. Rubio's a great passer. Right now, that's the best part of his game. And really, that's all he needs to do. He don't need to score buckets right now.
That's right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I'm not as high on the T-Wolves as you are. I still think they have to turn around that losing culture. You know, it's hard to turn around a losing culture. I think they can do it. I think they're a year away. I think they get closer, and then next year they make a run towards a playoff spot. PhD, lottery to playoffs. Who you got?
I think it's the Utah Jazz. I think the Jazz has a really strong core. Al Jefferson, Millsap, and Devin Harris. You know, a couple of years ago, we were looking at Devin Harris in that group of emerging point guards, young point guards, with the Chris Pauls, the Derrick Roses. You know, we were thinking, Deron Williams. Harris was right outside that. I mean, he was right there. And I think in the right situation, I mean, they've given him the keys, okay? I don't know what was up with him and Avery what's the Deacon's last name, the coach, young Avery?
Avery Johnson?
I don't know what's up with him and Avery Johnson. I mean,
boiling water.
But I think getting him out to Utah, and last year, you know, either Marcus or Devon made this astute observation of, you know, Salt Lake City, if you had to pick one city that's most like Madison, it'd probably be Salt Lake City, okay? And so I think that he can thrive there. And this is a guy that can put up 17 to 20 points, give you 8 to 11 assists, and really finish games with his quickness and strong shooting ability. So I like that core with him, Jefferson, and Millsap. Plus, I like what they have coming off the bench. They got Favors. Derek Favors has been balling in the preseason. I mean, he has been playing very well. He started to come on towards the end of last year as well. And then this Tanner guy as well. So, I mean, they are 4 to 5 deep up front. Now, the perimeter, I mean, this is where they're going to need guys to step up. You know, they've got, I believe, C.J. Miles, Rajah Bell. But outside of that, I'm not sure what else they're bringing to the table in terms of perimeter players. But they have the core there, and I think that they have the ability to sneak in and grab one of those, you know, the 7th or 8th seed.
Okay. Yeah, Utah, you know, they got Gordon Hayward, they got Alec Burks, who they drafted in the first round this year. They got a decent squad. They have a ton up front with Kanter, Favors, Jefferson, Okur. I mean, they're really deep up front. Again, it depends on how they all put it together, how they figure out the rotation. I could see them. If I was them, I'd try and move Okur for some backup, for some backcourt help. That's what I'd try and do because Okur is a piece in L.A. With the Lakers who could – and L.A. doesn't have any backcourt help, so they would have to swing something. But that's a piece that – he's a guy who, you know, if he were to get to a New York or a Miami or an L.A., he could really be a sneaky good pickup because he's still got some years left. He's healthy again. He rebounds well. He blocks shots, and he can shoot from the perimeter. So he'd be a huge get for a team, and I think that's the guy they could flip for some additional assets or some additional help in their backcourt. So for me, the teams I'm looking at as being able to make that turnaround from non-playoff to playoff, the New Jersey Nets. Are a team I'm looking at in the East. I think they could easily, with a full year of Deron Williams, I think we'll see a different Brook Lopez because he's playing with an elite point guard. I think he's going to make guys like Anthony Morrow and some of the other players there look a lot better than they really are. And I think on a short track, you know, I think they may catch the people off guard and win some games that they maybe shouldn't win, and sneak into an AC. I can see that happening for sure. The other team that I'm really intrigued by and I think has a lot of potential are the Houston Rockets. Houston's got a very solid roster. They're young, they're deep, you know, they kind of have moved on from the whole Yao thing, which plagued them last year. And they were a really good team last year and just missed the playoffs. I think this year they make it. I see, you know, I kind of go into number two. You know, which team, which playoff teams from last year do we see missing the playoffs? Out west, I see Portland probably falling out. The Hornets definitely falling out of the playoffs. And in the east, I see the 76ers falling back and possibly falling out of the playoffs. Or even the Hawks, depending upon what they do with Josh Smith. So yeah, I think I like the Rockets and I like the Nets. So number two, what playoff teams do you think will miss the playoffs this year? Kind of gave mine the Hornets for obvious reasons. You lose Chris Paul, though I think Eric Gordon is a great player. I think he's going to have a tremendous year for them. He's going to finish in the top five in scoring in the league. Chris Kaman is a good piece. He's a good player, aspiring contract. But I think they're 2-3 years away. Depending upon what they get in the draft, from being relevant again. And the Trailblazers, I think the jig is up. I mean, this 2-3 years ago was a team on the rise, looked like they were going to compete with the Thunder for the next 10 years for supremacy out west, and it just hasn't worked out for the Blazers. Brandon Roy retired because of knees. Greg Oden had another quote-unquote setback. I think this dude's whole career has been a setback.
wow. From you? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is at this point, man. Like, the dude cannot stay healthy. Now, don't get me wrong, he can play when he's healthy. When he's healthy, he can play. When is he healthy, though? You know? I mean, at this point, you can't keep waiting on this guy to come back. So, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, he's hurt. He had a setback. Quote, unquote, setback. So those are both teams that I think are going to take a step back because right now the Trailblazers front line is old as dirt. When you talk about Marcus Camby, Kurt Thomas, them dudes is old. Other than LaMarcus Aldridge, they got some old fogies on their front line. And this short season is going to do them in because those guys aren't going to be able to play, you know, back-to-back-to-backs, which are what's going to be required for them to fit the season in and the time frame that they're going to get it done in. So those are the two things I think are falling out in the West, the Blazers and the Hornets, and in the East. The 76ers, I just don't know what to make of them. They have a lot of similar parts, whether it be Iguodala and Evan Turner or Thaddeus Young and Elton Brand, just guys who are very similar in how they play the game. I don't know. They don't really have a legitimate big. Jrue Holiday's a nice guard. But, again, Lou Williams is almost the same kind of player. So they have a lot of similar pieces, a lot of interchangeable parts. I just don't know what to make of those pieces yet. I mean, are they going to move Iguodala at some point? Possibly. But who knows? So I think they'll fall back a little bit, and maybe the Nets or the Bucks could sneak into the playoffs as an 8 or a 7 seed. And then the Hawks are kind of – in a team in flux. They've been in the playoffs the last couple of years. The East has gotten much tougher, which I think is going to push them back down to a 6, 7, or 8 seed in the East, depending upon how things pan out with Indiana. Indiana's an up-and-coming team. So, yeah, that's my number two. Those are my teams in the playoffs that might miss. PAZ.
So I also selected the 76ers for essentially the same reasons that you picked. With addition to Evan Turner, when you select a guy second overall in the draft, you expect him to bring something to your team the first year, second year at the worst. And I just haven't seen it quite yet. You know, seems like a good kid. I'm rooting for him. But if he gives them what he gave them last year, which was inconsistency, I mean, this could put this franchise back a few years. The next team is the Magic, Orlando Magic. now, while I think they have the talent to be a top 8 team in the East, I mean, just with Dwight Howard alone, that's going to put you there for the most part. I think his contract issues is really going to handicap this team. If they don't get off to a fast start, now the talk's going to turn to, okay, what are we doing with Dwight? Are we going to try to move him? Are we going to try to get some value back? And I think for this reason, this is like a train wreck awaiting to happen. So I would go with the 76ers and the Magic as teams that made the playoffs last year but will miss the playoffs this year.
All right, all right. THD. I mean, I'm sorry, D. Wills.
Yeah, I would say the Heat's probably the 76ers in the I'm going either the Magic or the Hawks, but I think the Magic just because I think they might move Dwight, and then I think what they're getting back is going to be – I just think in a short season, I just think that it's not going to be enough to make that run. And I really only picked, I think, one team I thought could make it, that'd be Milwaukee. So, I mean, even if the 76ers don't make it, I think Milwaukee might replace them. And then in the West, I kind of differ with the Trailblazers with you. I think one thing about the Trailblazers is you might say they like roaches or what it might be. They just keep coming back. But I think you look at LaMarcus Aldridge, Camby and Kurt Thomas, they just solid vets. But I think Gerald Wallace, Raymond Felton, Wesley, they're going to figure out a way to win with that roster. So I was thinking them at first, but then I kind of just went another direction on that. I kind of think the Hornets, and I might even put the Grizzlies. And the reason why I'm like, the Grizzlies had a great run, but they like a great one-hit wonder. Think about that album. You listen to it, it was good. You're like, damn, I don't remember, that's my jam. That's how they are. And I think, you know, can they do it again? You know, they had to run, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like Daryl Dawkins used to say after he had a good game, don't expect that tomorrow. And so I don't know if they're going to come back and do it again. So the two teams I think might be in danger might be the Hornets and the Grizzlies.
Interesting. Now, here's what I'm going to throw out. I'm going to throw it out there. What about the Lakers of Los Angeles?
You know, I actually think the Lakers are primed to have a good year.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what they have up front. They have their own big three, quite honestly. Paul and Bynum, just from the little bit I saw him play last night, they're playing well together. This is their third or fourth full year together. I mean, they're passing the ball well. Assuming they can stay healthy, and yeah, that's a big if. I think they could be a top two or three seed out in the West. I think Kobe comes out and just puts up an MVP caliber year this year.
And that could happen. But my thing is that, can they win with Derek Fisher and Steve Blake as their primary options at the point? I mean, it's laughable to think about.
Well, one of the things I will say is that,
because they're not running the triangle no more, so point matters now.
Yeah, but I would say that some of the things that they're going to run in their system is going to try to help accommodate that. So I think they're going to do some things that are not doing it. And I think defensively they'll have some principles that will be a little bit more solid. I mean, Phil has never been a defensive coach. I mean, he tried to stretch defense, but he's never, in my mind, been
a coach. Mike Brown ain't an offensive coach. I mean, clear out for LeBron.
I feel like the Lakers are probably going to be like third or fourth in the West. You know, that's about where I figure they're going to be.
I predict bottom five. I really do. Bynum's going to get hurt. Again, this is back-to-back-to-back. Bynum's going to get hurt. Kobe may need to have to make a sneak trip to Germany. He's going through a divorce.
That's why I think he's going to kill him. He's going to be in that condo doing what he wants to do. It's old. Kobe's going to...
Yeah, you thought that would work for Tiger, too.
Yeah, but it is not. He ain't crashing stuff into a tree.
Nah. But he's still coming off of a lot of money.
Yeah, but that's a different type of divorce than what he going through the divorce. Tiger had the incident that caused the divorce. That's two different things.
Well, see, don't sleep on this though, man, because this divorce is not ugly now.
But again, this is what I think is going on. All right, this is what I think is going on with this whole Kobe Jabbar situation. Here we go. All right.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Let me expound upon this situation for a moment. All right. Now, you know, we got all this money to be made as a basketball wife. No, right? Correct?
Yes.
This is a substantial amount of money and fame to be accrued as a basketball wife. Mm-hmm. Now, but if you're the wife of Kobe Bryant, you can't do that. You can't access any of that. Why? Kobe won't let you put his kids on TV. He won't let you put his house on TV. None of that's going to happen. But if you divorce from Kobe, you can create your own little empire.
That's right.
And we're going to see Vanessa Bryant become her own little brand in a minute. She's going to ascend to that Kardashian level of I'm famous for nothing. She's going to ascend to that level now that she's free of Kobe's restrictions because he wants to protect his brand. Now she can be here. It's the same thing that Matt Barnes' little cheap wife did. You know, she got the show. She's somebody now. I don't need you no more. Let's separate. That's the new move, man. And that's what's going on right here. And when she gets her own brand, Kobe better put some literature in that in his divorce settlement that says, hey, my name don't come up.
He better pull a Shaq, huh?
He better put some literature out there, because otherwise she's gonna turn a profit. All right, she's tired of watching these other basketball wives get famous for nothing, become household names for nothing, and she feels like she's the real queen bee because she's got the best. She's got that guy. You know what I mean? She's got Kobe. So none of them should be able to hold a candle to what she could do. That's what's happening with that, man. That's why that divorce is going down, in my opinion. Because I don't think Kobe's behavior has changed. I don't think all of a sudden he just started stepping out on his old lady. He's been stepping out on his old lady. But now she sees an opportunity. She sees an opportunity to make her own money, become her own star. And that money lasts longer than Kobe's money. Because she could be that for as long as she can think of some stupid shit to do on TV.
I think that's gonna pull
Kobe down a little bit, man. I think it's gonna pull him down a little bit. As mentally tough as he is, it's different when it's your spouse. Your spouse affects you differently. It affects you differently than the average cat on the street saying some crazy stuff about you.
Kobe's average 29-30 in the first 2 months. I got a feeling he gonna be in his, and I'm not. You know me. Even though I got him up there. I'm not a huge Kobe fan. The one thing I learned over the years, Kobe's going to go for 30 in his first month. He's going to go for 30. He might have a couple 40.
And you know what? He might. But them back-to-back-to-backs is going to add up, man.
He's going to finger roll on them. That's all I was thinking. Like,
well, I mean, outside. But again, you think about Miami's roster last year. Outside of their big three, LA's roster is arguably weaker than Miami's roster outside of their big three. Ron is not what he used to be on either end of the court. Matt Barnes is Matt Barnes. Josh McRoberts is a nice pickup, but he's still Josh McRoberts. He's still a spot player right now. Maybe, you know, they can bring Troy. Maybe, you know, Troy Murphy wakes up and realizes he's still in the NBA. And then the backcourt is in shambles. So outside of Gasol, Bynum, and Kobe, what else is there?
I mean, you know, a lot of these teams like this, what it's going to come down to is that what Bynum's been asking for, he got to do. So he got to step up.
But is Bynum going to be able to do that with no perimeter shooting?
They
got no shooters.
He's going to have to. I got a feeling that was killer on this depth chart. When you look at the depth chart for the last, there's no one behind Bynum. I look at the depth chart like that. It's the first depth chart. You even put Uwe Blah behind somebody. It's like everybody got someone backing them up.
You got somebody behind Gasol, Meta World Peace. Even Kobe got somebody behind him. Bynum, nobody. You almost got to slide Gasol under him like twice.
Nobody behind him. You might, that might make your point.
Yeah, like, it's a reason they're trying to make a move out there. It's the reason they feel a need to make a move.
This is what we got. We got a young Darius Morris out there. I'm a big blue. He can play. It's going to be a long time for him to kind of get into that mold. Big guard. You know, he's going to have to be able to give him. He's a young rookie. Watch out for him. I think he's a cat that can play and roll a little bit. They're going to have to figure out how, you know, over time how they get him into the game because he's a different pace than Blake and Fisher. So I don't know how they're going to use
Man,
that.
I'm a different pace than Blake and Fisher.
But
at this point in my life, I'm playing faster than Blake and Fisher. And they do that for a living.
What it's going to come down to is it's going to come down to Kobe, Bynum, and Gasol going to carry most of it with help from some other folks. I figure they're going to be third or fourth in the West. I still settle on that.
Okay, so they're going to be third or fourth in the West. All right, I'm going to give you names. You tell me they finish ahead of these teams. Oklahoma City.
Nope.
San Antonio.
Yep.
Dallas.
Yep. Yep.
Nope.
Clippers.
Yep.
You think they finish ahead of the Clippers?
Yeah, because I think the Clippers are going to lose some games that they shouldn't while they're trying to get some of that stuff together. They're going to have some moments. So, yeah, I think they'll finish ahead of the Clippers.
Nah.
No,
I'm not buying that one.
Lakers will win some nights just on IQ.
Man, who else has an IQ on this? Who else on this team has an IQ? This ain't the same old Lakers, man. These ain't the same guys. This ain't the same battle-tested team. Josh McRoberts ain't never been nowhere. Troy Murphy ain't never been nowhere. Matt Barnes really ain't nobody.
You got three big timers. You can't. Bynum gonna win the matchup most nights. Gasol gonna win the matchup most nights. Kobe gonna be. There's gonna be very few nights he's gonna be able to match Kobe. Those three matchups you win in just about every night. You win those three every night. The only certain teams where you're gonna say that's in question. Even up against the Clippers, the point guard places where you lose out, but all the other ones. They ain't nobody checking Gasol. Ain't nobody checking
Blake. Blake, Gasol can't guard Blake.
But Blake can't guard Gasol. He's going to be down there dancing with wolves on him. Up and under, putting him in the torture chamber. You know Gasol.
Hey, Gasol is soft. Don't forget that, man. Don't forget that. Gasol is soft.
In the playoffs, but not in the regular season.
Gasol is soft in the playoffs, too. We just don't see it. We just don't see him night in and night out. So yeah, we gonna see how this goes, man. I'm telling you, Lakers bottom five in the West. I'm calling it now. Put me down. Put me down for that. All right.
Say bottom five, you mean like they're gonna be a?
They're gonna be a fifth or lower.
Okay.
Fifth or lower. Put me down for it. Fifth or lower seed for the Lakers. All right. Put me down for that one. All right, so who, number three, who are we predicting to be most improved or breakout player this year? Last year was Kevin Love. You know, it could be a guy who's, you know, kind of a name guy who goes to being a superstar like Derrick Rose did last year where he was an all-star, legit player, and last year he took it to another level. Kevin Love, same thing, a known player. But he took it to a whole nother place last year. Who's that guy this year? D. Wills.
I struggle with this one because I was still trying to do it. But I will most improve, and I think this is still a young player, but I just think we're going to see some jumps this year, is Austin at Detroit. I think this is a kid that got a lot of skills. I think Detroit's going to be an interesting team. I think that he's going to be a kind of guy that I think you're going to see I think you might see some leap in his play. I had a chance to watch him the other night. I just like his approach and his way to the game. I just see him growing to a new level. And I like what they got in terms of, in terms of just coaching staff and where they're going there in Detroit. They got ways to go, but I like this kid. And then breakout player, and I think this is a lot to do with the trade, and now he's back. I think he put some nights together last year. I think, and you talked about the team, Houston, I think Kevin Martin. I saw him play the other night, and I think he just got a chip on his shoulder. And I don't know, and he's one of the kids that I like. I really got to see him play last year, but I think this kid is going to take it to another level. So I don't know if it's the Kevin Love level, but I think this kid is going to be night in, night out, getting in it. And I like to see where he's going to go.
Okay. PhD, breakout candidates.
I got two guys. Before I get to them, I want to give kudos to that awesome Bay pick. I agree with that. I was a little confused why they kept Tayshaun, if you have Day. But I do like that pick. So my two guys, and you guys are going to have a really good time laughing on my second one. Okay, so just get ready. So the first one is Rudy Gay. I think Rudy Gay would have given Kevin Love a good run for the money for most improved player last year had he not got hurt halfway throughout the season. This was a guy that was putting up 20 points, 9 rebounds, 2.5 steals, and 2 blocks a game from the small forward position. You know, he played in the summer of 2010 on that USA basketball team that won the world championships. If you look at every player, just about every major contributor from that team, you look at Lamar Odom, he had a career year. You look at Tyson Chandler, he had a career year. Rudy Gay, he had a career year. I mean, these are guys that played in the system just came out like gangbusters last season. Rudy Gay is a guy I think that you can look to get another couple of points out of him a game, perhaps around 25, perhaps around 8 to 10 rebounds a game. If he does that, all of a sudden he's jumping to the elite. My second guy, Josh McRoberts for the Lakers.
Okay. They're going to need one. If he's the one, that's the reason why they're going to be in that three.
You know, I never been a huge fan of this guy when he was at Duke. But he showed me something last season when he was healthy. You know, he along with Tyler Hansborough played fairly well for the Pacers down the stretch. And McRoberts, one thing he's added to his game that he didn't have in college was, you know, essentially he's able to do just about everything Odom can do, but just not quite as good. He can put on the deck a little bit to be, you know, close to 7 foot tall. He can shoot it 15 to 18 feet. He can extend you out that far. And on the boards, he's not bad. You know, I mean, he can give you 7 to 10 rebounds on a given night. So I forecast this guy is going to average about 12 points, 7 rebounds a game. And compared to where he was at last year, you know, that may bring out a most improved player.
Good game.
You guys can take it off the mute button. I know you've been laughing. Take it off the mute button.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, man, I can't. You know, I like the Rudy Gay. I can ride with you on Rudy Gay. I'm there with you. We right here on Rudy Gay. But Josh McRoberts, you know this is Josh McRoberts, right? Right?
Yep.
I'm just.
Keep the tape, Phil.
Yeah, we got to keep this tape.
Mark the tape because he laughing. I'm not going to laugh. Because the Lakers got to know something. Lakers like the Yankees. They never lose. Even though
The Lakers was losing before they got Gasol. Okay, let's not pretend. Kobe was threatening to leave. I remember it getting real short. Winning erases memories, man.
Yeah,
let's not forget. Let's not forget.
Let's not forget, we a couple years ago, before the Gasol trade, Kobe wanted out. Kobe was on his way out. If the Bulls, for some reason, didn't think all of a sudden Luau Deng was an untouchable, which is interesting, they didn't trade for Kobe because he wanted to keep Luau Deng. All I'm saying, let's not pretend like the Lakers haven't had lows. All right, they have. They've had lows with Kobe. They've had lows with Kobe. So.
All right, start the tape, Phil. I'm going to laugh at you.
Hey, I ain't putting no stock in McRoberts. Guys who I think are going to break out, one guy who I think is going to take the jump from a known guy, a named guy, a star, to, like, one of the guys in the league is John Wall. I think this is the year we really get to see what this kid can do. And I think he's going to be on that Derrick Rose trajectory within, you know, the next 2 years. He's going to be viewed as one of the top 10 players in the league. So that's one guy who I think is ready to really jump up and grab everybody in the league's attention. Another guy I think is ready to make that move, and that's Eric Gordon. I think Eric Gordon, having his own team, you know, he averaged 22 points a game last year. I think you're going to see that get up to about 26.
You don't think he's going to take a hit with Chauncey and some of his guys there?
Eric Gordon?
Yeah.
In New Orleans?
He went to New Orleans.
Yeah, he's going to go off. I mean, he's going to go off, and it's not a terrible team. It's not what it was with CP3, but it's not a terrible roster. I mean, Ariza's decent. You know, you got Kamen and Okafor. Aminu's in tow. Jared Jack is there. Carl Landry's there coming off the bench.
Yeah.
So it's not a horrible team. So there's enough around them where teams can't just be, like, looking at him and playing defense, staring at him. I think he's going to go for 25, 5, and 5. And he's going to have one of those years. And he's going to really push himself into that category. Again, I think top three two-guard outside of D-Wade and Kobe. I mean, he'll be the next best two-guard in the league outside of D-Wade and Kobe, easily. So those are two guys I really like to kind of break out, so to speak, and really go from being guys who everybody's heard of, you know, who most people have heard of, to guys that everybody's heard of and everybody knows of. And when you think of NBA – you know, these are guys that, you know, you talk about as top 15 players. So, on to number four. On to the next one. Who will be the league MVP in 2011-12? I'll take this one first. And I'm going to go with Chris Paul as my MVP pick. I think Chris Paul is going to do everything in his power to make sure that the Clippers are winning. I think they're going to struggle a little bit early, but when I say struggle, I just mean they're not going to be hitting on all cylinders. Doesn't mean I don't think they'll keep winning games. I just don't think they'll be hitting on all cylinders. I think once they get to hitting on all cylinders, they are going to be a problem out west. I think Blake Griffin is ready to solidify himself as the top power forward in the league. You got two guys in Paul and Griffin who have tremendous work ethic. And then you add in vets with tremendous work ethic like Caron Butler and Chauncey Billups. Plus you have a big in the middle and DeAndre Jordan, who's athletic as any big man in the league outside of Dwight Howard. You got a decent bench. That's gonna be a tough squad, and I think CP3 is gonna get a lot of MVP consideration because of the success that they're gonna have, and I think he's gonna win one. I think he's gonna win it this year. So that's my guy, Chris Paul. PhD.
I'm going with Kevin Durant. I think he's getting better and better. He's supposed to put on 10 pounds this summer. And, you know, for his frame.
What do you do, eat a Snickers?
I mean, for his frame, if he put on any weight, if he put on 2 pounds, it would be something worth bragging about. You know, I think he's going to average 30 points. The reason I think that he'll be more of a MVP candidate this year because his rebounding numbers are going to increase. I could easily see him, you know, grabbing 10 rebounds or so per game. And, you know, I think this is the year that Oklahoma City takes over the one seed. So I'm going to go with Kevin Durant.
Okay. D. Wills.
I'm stepping out. I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going for a repeat. I think it's going to be Derrick Rose again because they haven't changed much, and I believe they're going to be successful. The only way they're going to be successful is for him to do it again. I think he got a little taste of that success, and I thought about this. I went through. I looked at Durant. I mean, he led the league in scoring last year. I felt like, yeah, maybe he's going to take him to the next level. I just, when I look back, I look at the Bulls roster, I look at what they're doing, and I think, and I think about Rose and his will to be great. I think he's going to come right back at it. I think people might be reluctant to give it to him again, but I think I'm going for him for a repeat.
Okay. Okay. So Rose, Paul, and Durant. No LeBron. Interesting.
I think part of it is I think between Wade and LeBron, I think they cost each other votes. I think you can make an argument for either one of them. I just felt like I was going to think about one of them. I just think they cost each other votes. I just think that's what happened with them.
All right.
These other
who's playing in the finals? D. Wills, who's playing in the finals? Last one.
I'm going for the rematch. Miami against Dallas.
Okay. I don't know about that one. PAG, who's playing in the finals?
I'm going to ride with the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers. I think the Heat will dominate this year. I think LeBron James will come back hungrier. I think their roles are going to be a bit more defined. I wouldn't be surprised if LeBron leaves the league and assists. I just think this team, LeBron specifically, is going to have a year we're going to be like, wow, why do we doubt this guy?
All right. I'm going with Miami as well. And I'm going Miami and Oklahoma City. I do love the idea of finally getting Bron Kobe in the finals. But, again, I'm not high on the Lakers. I don't know if they have the horses in the backcourt to be able to compete with some of these other teams when you have to go through a Russell Westbrook, when you have to go through Chris Paul and Chauncey, when you have to go through the backcourt that Dallas is going to throw at them. I don't know if they have I keep looking at Derek Fisher and Steve Blake and thinking to myself, I can do a better job. I'm serious. So that's what has me low on the Lakers, but I think the Clippers and the Thunder are going to play in the Western Conference Finals, and the Thunder are going to pull it out just because they've gotten there. They had that run, they lost. Now they can get back and be more focused and be more ready to go. So that's who I'm going with right there. So mark it down. We all got our picks in. So, D. Wills is going with the rematch, Miami, Dallas. PhD is going with the Heat and the Lakers, and I'm going with the Heat and the Thunder. So, that's it. Now we're going to get into PhD's 20 through 11 top 50 picks. So, why don't you go ahead and run through that, brother?
Number 20, I've got Dr. J, Julius Erving, 20. At 19, I've got the mailman, Karl Malone at 19. I've got Chuck, Charles Barkley at 18. I've got Hondo, John Havlicek at 17. Jerry West at 16, LeBron James at 15, Bob Pettit, Robert Pettit at 14, the Admiral, David Robinson at 13. I've got Shaquille O'Neal at 12, and the big O, Oscar Robertson at 11. Dr. J at 20, Mailman at 19, Sir Charles at 18, John Havlicek at 17, Jerry West at 16, LeBron at 15, Bob Pettit at 14, the Admiral at 13, Shaq at 12, and Oscar Robertson at 11.
Now, you know who's – well, you got Chuck up there. I was going to say, you know who's the only one in your group without a championship, right? The Admiral, why so high?
That's the question I was going to ask.
Yeah, you know, the Admiral was a tough one for me. You know, Marcus had the Admiral at 33. Devon had him at 26. You know, I think what he brought to the game was offensively, he got a skill set that we hadn't seen in a really long time, perhaps maybe ever, from a big guy who you could drop it down in the post. And, I mean, he was a beast on the block. But also he could take you out to about 18. He was just as effective on the block and, you know, also on the perimeter. Defensively as well is something that I always just thought David Robinson was so dominating at. You know, that one season he averaged 4.5 blocks. You know, he won a scoring championship. You know, I thought he was a dominant player that had very little around him for most of his career. And by the time Duncan came, you know, he was at the tail end of his career. If you think about it, David Robinson, out of all these guys in the top 20, in my opinion, no one had less around them than David Robinson. One could argue LeBron through the first 7 or 8 years of his career. But David Robinson, you know, like you talked about Eric Gordon a few minutes ago, defenses were able to double David Robinson, and he still dropped 25 to 30 during the prime of his career. Defensively, you know, he could guard 4 or 5s, and he was able to get up and down the court too. So for a 5, I mean, to me, he revolutionized that position. He did a lot of what Dwight Howard's doing today, but Dwight Howard had David Robinson's college game offensively. You know, we'd be talking about Dwight Howard as an MVP every year.
Okay. And I still find it hard to put him up that high, but you make a good argument. You make a good argument.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. And then what about Oscar Robertson outside the top 10? Talk to me a little about that.
You know, quite honestly, obviously I've never got to see Oscar play when he was in his prime or period. And so this is one where, because I didn't, you know, I'm trying to trust my eyes as much as possible, Oscar probably lost some spots because of that. So I don't have a really strong ground to stand on because I didn't see him play a lot. But I put guys ahead of him, you know, like a Magic. Well, I won't get into my top 10, but mostly because I just didn't get to see him play enough. I heard his impact was really good. And when I was going over this list with a friend, he said, how can you put, you know, Magic ahead of Oscar? And how can you not have them back-to-back? Because they're pretty much the same player. But, you know, I just haven't seen Oscar play enough.
I can respect it.
Okay. So we got about 10 minutes left. What I want to do is I'll run through mine. Unless, hey, you got any more critiques of Phil's list? It's overall solid, man. Overall solid. I got, you know, the Admiral thing, like I said, I didn't have him that high, but I can see, you definitely can make a case for it. There are about 3 or 4 centers between Hakeem, Shaq, Moses, and David Robinson, who I think it was really hard to kind of situate those guys because they were all so great and they were all so dominant that it was really hard to – it was really splitting hairs to decide who would go where.
Yeah, I have seven centers in my top 13, seven of them.
Yeah, let me see. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have six in mind. So
I have my list up again, but I think I'm close to that.
Yeah. So I'll jump into mine, and then we'll go after hours with the pick six. So for the downloaders, you get to hear the pick six. For the live listeners, go download the show. You get after hours edition with the pick six and the dogs of the week, brought to you by Resistance Digital. All right, here we go. So, number 20, Chuck. The Chuck Wagon, Charles Barkley, the round mound of rebound. All right, the voice of the NBA currently. Again, Chuck, dominant player, effective both ends of the court. Again, one of those freak skill sets to size ratio, where the things that he was able to do with his size, we probably won't see ever again. There are certain guys who have just an unbelievable, you know, when you would think about a Dirk, you know, the way he can shoot the ball at 7 feet. We may not see another 7-footer be able to do the things that he does on the perimeter. You think about Allen Iverson, as far as the way he took the ball to the basket at 6'1". 160 pounds, the way he would score, the way he could take over games with his scoring. And then there's Charles Barkley, who played power forward at 6'6", 6'5", you know, and did not seem ever out of place at the power forward position. Just an amazing player. Number 19, Isaiah Thomas. In my opinion, arguably the best little man to ever play. Fierce competitor, you know, I nominated Chris Paul as my MVP. I see a lot of Isaiah and what Chris Paul brings to the table as far as leadership, his determination to win, his dedication to winning, his work ethic. That's all cut from that Zeke mode. Elgin Baylor at 18. Elgin's a player I didn't get to see, but again, from everything I've heard, he was Dr. J before Dr. J, who was Jordan before Jordan, who was Kobe before Kobe, who was LeBron before LeBron. So, you know, he is the prototype of that lineage of elite swingman, that elite two-guard, that elite wing player. Baylor was the prototype. He was patient zero. Number 17, the only man in my top 20, was outside of Chuck, without a title, LeBron James. And again, this is another one of those players who size to skill set ratio we may never see again. The things this young man can do at 6'8 to 6'9, 250 to 260 pounds is unbelievable. The explosiveness, this is one of the most physically gifted human beings ever, period. The things that he can do with a basketball are unbelievable, and the quickness and ability to move that he has for someone his size is something that we've never seen. All he has to do is put it together on the court and get that ultimate kind of icing on the cake, which is a championship. And, you know, depending on how the rest of his career goes, he could easily shoot up into the top 10 of this list very easily, and he'd possibly even work his way into the top 5, depending upon how his career continues to evolve. Number 16, Scottie Pippen. Scottie, if there were ever such thing in basketball as a 5-tool player, Scottie would be it. A guy who can score, rebound, pass, defend. He can do it all. This guy could do anything you wanted him to do on the basketball court. He can guard multiple positions. If not for his own teammate, I think the level of accolades he would have received would have been even greater. Many times he finished second in the league in steals, only to Michael Jordan, his teammate, at a 6'8 wing. Again, one of the, in my opinion, one of the best all-around players to ever play the game. I would probably put him just behind Magic and Oscar Robertson as far as his ability to play multiple positions at his size. At number 15, Bob Cousy, quintessential winner, excellent point guard, was one of the first point guards to really razzle and dazzle on the court, to really kind of bring some of the playground game to the league. Very creative player, brought a lot of innovation to the game, and a true icon of the league. Number 14, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq, young, dominant big man. When he was younger, I mean, I remember as a kid watching this man break backboards and bring down just the whole, not just shatter the glass, bring down the whole apparatus. You know, Shaq, excellent player, dominant force, giant personality. So I have Shaq at 14. Number 13, Kobe Bean Bryant. Elite scorer, one of the greatest scorers of all time. Excellent two-way player. Unbelievable talent. For me, he was my third two-guard. So he was my third-ranked two-guard all time. I have him at number three as far as two-guards go. And he still has some chapters left to write. Five championships, two by himself, three with Shaq. Just an amazing talent. Number 12, Moses Malone. Just a dominant player, physical specimen, dominated the glass, great rebounder, great low post scorer, just an unbelievable player. First guy to go from high school to the league. At number 11, Tim, the big fundamental Duncan. Timmy, as we call him in the streets. This guy is a dominant post player. I had him ranked as my best power forward ever. Again, that ability to shoot the ball from the perimeter, dominate both ends of the court, to be a factor throughout the game, winning and leading his team to championships. Great leader, great locker room guy, excellent skill set. I mean, there's not a post move that he hasn't mastered. There isn't a facet of the game that he isn't excellent to lead at, as far as passing from the post, recognizing double teams, you know, shooting from the perimeter. Guy can do it all. So that's my 20 through 11.
That's the one I'm fighting you on. I even give you LeBron. And I can give you LeBron on everything you said about Bron. I can give you Bron. Pippen is like a flower that was able to grow because of where he was. I don't know if he would have grown on his own if he had just got drafted to another team. So I think that's one of the things that I agree with some of your assessment around him. I don't see him as a top 20 guy of all time. I like Pippen's greatness. That's one I'm struggling on. Maybe that's just my bad bias. That's something I'm struggling on, Pippen.
Okay. We've discussed this. All right, Scottie's, again, you look at Scottie's resume, there's not much. I can see, you know, I can see you taking that angle, but, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, man. He did what he did, playing next to the greatest player in the game.
But the argument,
I would argue, his numbers should have been worse. He wasn't the focal point.
He wasn't the focal point
of the offense. He was the second option. He spent his whole career as the second option.
I think he enjoyed being that second option. I think that allowed him to freelance. I think Jordan took a lot of pressure off him, allowed him to grow, allowed him to get over migraines.
Maybe Jordan stunted his growth though.
I don't believe Jordan stunted his growth.
Maybe he could have been a one.
If we're gonna talk hypotheticals. I think when the time he had to try to be a lead singer early in his career, I mean, he had a point there where people were like, is he gonna make it? I remember when he was playing the Pistons, they're like, is he going to make it? Because he had the gifts, but then he had the mental toughness. And I think Jordan allowed him to
But think about that, though. Outside of Magic and Oscar Robertson, guys with that vast of a skill set usually take longer to develop.
But they do.
Think about Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady didn't come into the league right away setting the world on fire.
But to be top 20, those two came through the door dominating. They had to pour water and stir and mix and add heat for him to sprout.
When he got going, his run was like no other.
But his run was like no other with Jordan catching. That's like sitting second seat. You know this. You're a coach. There's a lot different between being assistant coach and head coach. Just that little 12 inches and moving your bottom from one seat to the next is different. He was good being Tex Winters. It took him a while to get to the point where he could be he could sit in that regular seat. And I think if Jordan allowed him to mature in that way compared to the other people you talked about who came.
Or maybe Jordan stunted his growth. We all know Mike. Mike wasn't a nurturer. Mike was not a nurturer.
Mike was
a get your shit together guy.
But when Pippen came through the door, you saw him.
Mike wasn't trying to bring Scotty along.
Scotty grew for. I think I would say Scotty benefited more from that than he got hurt.
I don't think so.
I think Scotty
could have been a number one. Scotty definitely could have been a number one.
Scotty's like the cat going to the club with Suge Knight. You feel a little bit more confident when you walk in with Suge than you would if you just had to walk in by yourself. That's how it was.
Yeah, until that cat knocks somebody out on his own, yeah, he don't feel that. Because he always got somebody knocking him out before he get the chance to. But once you knock that cat out and you realize you can do this on your own, then your swagger changes a little bit. And I think that's Scotty. If he would have had the chance to carry the iron on his hip into the club instead of Mike always holding the iron on his hip,
but
I think Scotty's swag would have been different.
But the moment he had when he sat there on the bench, didn't go back in the game. That's all about the swagger. That's the insecurity.
That's because he wondered why his punk ass coach drew up and played for a foreigner.
Because. He didn't know if you had that. And then he went out there and knocked the shot out and then walked the hell out. Those are moments. See, those things keep you out the top 20. That might put you at 21. That don't put you at 20 and higher.
Man, Scotty got 6 rings. Mike got 6 rings. Did Mike win any without Scotty?
Oh, my boy John Sally got, 4 or 5 rings. Is it just about the rings? Can we count?
Yeah, we can count.
Shall we got four.
What was John Sally's career average since we counted? How many All-NBA teams did John Sally make since we counted?
I'm stepping in. Mark, tell me about Kobe Bryant.
Ahead of Shaq?
I don't understand how you could have Kobe as low as 13. Answer me this. Tell me differences, where there are differences, gaps, significant, this guy's better when you compare Jordan's game and Kobe's game.
When I compare Jordan's game to Kobe's game, significant gaps. Jordan definitely has a better post game, had a better post game. I think Jordan was a better defender. Kobe's an elite defender. Kobe's a very good defender, but Jordan was – Kobe doesn't have any Defensive Player of the Year awards. So I would say those two areas. I think Kobe, for me, Kobe – and this is my hip-hop orientation, but Kobe bit Mike Steves. Like – And we don't do biting. Like, Kobe came into the league wanting to be Mike to the point where he walked like Mike. He chewed his gum like Mike. So that to me, that's the difference. That's the difference. It's like, you know, your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Mike is Kobe's favorite rapper.
That's the difference.
I got to see your top 10 and I have Kobe in it. I'm going to say at least at 10.
But again, up until the game six of that Phoenix Sun game a couple years ago, Kobe hadn't had – I didn't see the 81-point game. The 81-point game was phenomenal, but I didn't see it. But up until that game, when I was watching it live, when they played the Phoenix Suns and he tapped Alvin Gentry on the booty after he hit that three, that was the first time I really watched Kobe play and was like, couldn't take my eyes off of the screen. That was the first time I was like, this dude is having one of those moments.
So let me ask you this. How would you view Kobe if there was no Mike?
How would I view Kobe if there was no Mike? I would view him very differently.
So where would he be on your list if there was no Mike?
He'd probably be top 10 because I got him at 13. So I think he could slide into the top 10. That's very possible. If he had come along and he was the best at what he did at his position, he would be higher. But there's somebody at his position who I feel was significant. And there are a couple people I have rated higher than him at his position. He would be up higher. He would.
And I know where the slip is. I can tell because it's even within the organization. So my sense is there's a couple people you haven't named that when I looked at the organization, even not just in a position, but in that organization,
right,
that I have ranked higher. And I think the reason why we probably have differences, I bet you we have those two people flipped. I bet. Because I think a name I haven't heard, who's at the same position and probably in the same organization.
Yeah, absolutely.
You haven't named yet. That
absolutely.
That I felt like Kobe moved past for my reasons. And to tell you the truth, if I hadn't felt that, I probably would be closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
When I started doing it, he's probably closer to 13 than he was where I ended up putting him. And the only reason I put him there is I felt like in the last few years he had passed that person. So I know why you and I differ on Kobe right now is because even organizationally, when you rank that, even those top players in that organization, I bet you we're probably similar in even rating that organization.
And when it's all said and done, Kobe probably will be higher on my list. He's still got some work to do, though. He's still got some work to do.
Are you considering Dr. J a three? You must be considering him a three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, your top the LeBron. I can understand why you made the argument, and I struggle with LeBron. Only reason I ain't giving LeBron credit right now, all the things you said, I agree with. Only thing I feel like he's had moments. He haven't had my top 20 moment yet, like I've seen some of my other players have. But I think if you were to do this list with me next year, and he has a run this year and does something, LeBron could shoot way up my list. Because I think if you look at his first 5 years or you look at his initial outburst, there's very few people in history that have had a better start than him.
All right, Marcus, so you got to put your defending shoes on again. So with Scottie Pippen, you had a 16. I had a 28, and Devon had a 37. Now, a similar guy, Bob Cousy. Bob Cousy, you had a 15.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I had a 32, and Devon had Bob Cousy at 39.
Yeah, I got to watch a couple of Bob Cousy's games, and I got to watch his hardwood classics, and I really developed an appreciation for what Bob Cousy did on the court, man. The way he played the game, he played hard. He was a key cog in those championship teams. He brought a little flash and flair to the game when there wasn't any. And I had him rated as my third best point guard.
Wow.
Behind Magic, the Big O, and the Big O.
And there could be arguments. I mean, like a lot of people, I would feel like I would put Isaiah ahead of him. for a number of reasons. I think Cousy, on that team, this is probably my bias. I got to work on this. I'm saying this. I think they benefited from a pretty stacked roster in a way that they're all great players. But I think what hurt them, other than Russell, what hurt them was the fact that they had all those pieces. And so, you know, that was the way that kind of took me away from him in a way. In terms of his ranking. And I felt like I even ranked him a little lower than he probably should have been ranked, but I didn't see him as a top 20 player. But you could look on a number of people's lists, there are people who would have Cousy in the top 20. So he's one of those cats, depending on your lens of the game, you could put him in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
Because you can't deny the championships. You can't deny that he didn't have a leadership role. You can't deny he wasn't one of the dominant point guards of his time at that. That's a hard thing to deny with him. But if I rank at point guards, I might not have him in the top three. But, you know, I probably would have him in that five, six range, but maybe not in that top three.
One of the issues I have with Cousy is, you know, when we get my top ten, you guys are going to flip when you see who I have in my top ten, or perhaps you already have. You know, I have a hard time, you know, taking guys from the 50s and 60s and 70s where I have serious questions if they would be athletic enough to get it done in the present day. And, you know, Bob Cousy, I haven't seen him play enough to really make that statement. But one of the things I have against some of these greats on the Celtics were, you know, their first three or four championships, there were only eight teams in the league. You know, there were things such as, you know, free agency had not happened yet. When players got drafted, they were pretty much stuck. You know, the Celtics picked up some players who opted not, like they got Red Auerbach, went around the draft, convinced guys not to enter the draft, and got them that way. So,
he was gangster.
You know,
he was gangster.
So, yeah. So when I look at that, I just have a hard time saying, you know, well, if certain players played where there were only eight teams in the whole league, I mean, again, that's one-fourth of what we have right now. And one can certainly complain, you know, to make the statement that 30 is way too much. But at the same time, when you only have seven other teams to compete against, and you have a dominant team, and you don't have things such as free agency to help balance the power, you know, because I think, like Scottie Pippen, we'd look at Bob Cousy much differently if he only had one or two championships. We'd look at Bill Russell much differently if he didn't have, what is it, nine championships he has, eight, something like that. You know, that's just the dilemma that I have with the Celtic team's world.
And when I looked at it, I was beginning, and if I had a little more time to look at the list, one of the things I was trying to consider is at what point did I feel like the sport was fully integrated? So that was one. And the other thing is the thing that you're talking about, just the number of teams in the league. Now, the one argument would be there was a lot of talent stacked throughout the league, and so every night was a battle. That could be one argument. That was something I was trying to consider, and I almost got to a point where I said, well, maybe do I just start this from 1970 on? I was almost going to play it like that. So, yeah, I was playing with those kind of things, like at what point, you know, and if you look at it, I probably have more people at what I call the height of the golden age of the NBA, you know, in some ways, where you basically talk about 79, you know, you may go through the mid-90s in terms of just the height of the game. And I think it's having a resurgence now. But, you know, those are the kind of things I was trying to bring in. And I didn't quite get there, but I could understand your argument.
Yeah. And I actually think it was more difficult then, because think about the league with eight teams right now. Think about the NBA with eight teams and how talented those teams would be, and how difficult it would be to come out of that melee and win a championship. Just think about how difficult the NBA would be without free agency. If you had guys playing together for 6-7 years on the same team. So, yeah, the game wasn't as athletic. I'll give you that. But I think it was still just as difficult to win a championship during that time, and maybe more difficult, because what you had was you were playing against guys who may not have been athletic, but they knew exactly what their teammate was going to do because they've been playing together for 4 or 5 years. And these were still the best guys around.
Yeah, and you had to go up against Wilt 9 times. You know, that's the other side.
I mean, every team in that era was loaded.
Yeah.
Because there's only 8. Every team in that era had guys who could play. Because it just, I mean, again, imagine today's league with 8 teams.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain guys who we consider stars who wouldn't even be starting.
And that's where it's good. And we want to bring my guy on as the historian to talk a little bit about that. We might have to get the dean on to talk about that issue, because I know he has some opinions about the very issue that you talk about, Phil, because he had a chance to see these guys play. So, you know, to provide that, you know, people may say Wilt is one of the greatest athletes of all time. But even as we talk about athleticism, in some ways, you know, to be even thinking about some of that as well. So it would be good to get somebody who had a chance to watch them play or be around that era of folks to do it. So that might be a topic for us in the future to kind of give us even, because that's even on the early end of my stuff, the people we're talking about. So all three of us are probably challenged to really understand that era of basketball.
Yeah. So let's get into our pick six for this week. We got a variety. For all the listeners out there, we won't be back next week. We're going to take the week off. We'll be back January 3rd. So we got some bowl games up. We have some NBA games up. We got quite the slate for you all.
But we will be playing the RSG Classic next week. So, right, we will be having that going. So
we're going to have some classic shows going next week.
We have our classic shows going next week.
So this week for the Pick Six, we got the Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers Sunday night. Green Bay is coming off of a loss, their first loss of the season, to the Kansas City Chiefs of all people. Romeo Crennel and crew got it done. Cal Orton came back to the field, into the starting lineup, and did the Packers in. The Chiefs defense held tight. Held serve and kept the Packers offense at bay. Probably Aaron Rodgers' first average game. I won't say it was a poor game, because it wasn't a poor game, only by his standards. It was an average game for anybody else, and he just can't be average with that team, especially missing a weapon like Greg Jennings. So, Packers at the Bears. Phil T, you taking the Bears? I'm taking the Packers. Phil, have you seen Caleb Haney throw football? If I had to get hit with, if I was standing 20 yards away from two NFL quarterbacks, one was Tim Tebow and one was Caleb Haney, and if either one of them hit me with a football, I would die, and I had to pick one of them to throw it at me, I'm picking Caleb Haney. As long as I got on the same color jersey as he do, I will not die. I put on a different color jersey, it's a wrap. Bury me in a white suit. I can't ride for the Bears. D. Wills, who you got?
And that's a Chicago native saying it. I for the same reason, man. It hurt me to watch the Bears. Packers, this is the Packers. It's gonna be a celebration in Lambeau.
All right. So now we got the Falcons at the Saints Monday night. Huge game. Playoff implications. The Saints are trying to keep pace with the Packers, and possibly trying to win this division and get a home game in the playoffs. the Falcons are trying to just keep pace and stay in the race to grab a playoff seed. Both teams are within the division. The Saints have been on fire. I mean, on fire! I mean, just killing people. Just killing people. The Falcons are coming off a big win against Jacksonville where they put up a bunch of numbers. The defense stepped up big time and played really well. Matt Ryan is starting to he's playing better. I won't say he's playing at an elite level, but he's playing better, which is good. So, Phil T took the Falcons. You want to explain that? On the road.
No, I was actually at this first matchup when the Saints were in Atlanta. I have to say that these two teams probably have the most African American fans. It was like visiting a black college homecoming outside. You know, in terms of the tailgating, the barbecue. I mean, it was beautiful. You know, and then inside, you know, I was telling my friend I was with that this is probably the one place where you can come and see that it's probably 80% African American in terms of, you know, the 60 or 70,000 people that were inside the Georgia Dome at a sellout. So I think it's a really unique dynamic. For that, you know, for those reasons, it's a huge rivalry. I don't think home field advantage means less in this matchup because both these teams travel well. When I was at this game, there was as many Saint fans as there were Falcon fans in the stands. And I hear it's the same way when they play at the Superdome. So for this reason, I think the Falcons are just playing so well. They found a way to run the ball well, in addition to using their two stud receivers in terms of Julio Jones and Roddy White. So for that reason, I like the Falcons. And plus, they're fighting for a playoff berth.
All right. I'm taking the Saints. They just look so damn good right now. They are literally killing it. Drew Brees is, I mean, Aaron Rodgers had one bad game, but they are definitely 1 and 1AA. All right, they're 1A, 1AA, however you want to put it. These cats are one and the same as far as the way they're playing the quarterback position right now. Drew Brees is coming off a game where he threw for over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. Just an unbelievable season, an unbelievable performance, and that team is hot right now. Quiet is kept. The Saints have a very good running game. They don't have one back, but they get you in a lot of different ways. Darren Sproles is having a great season, replacing Reggie Bush. And just a side note, props to Reggie Bush. 200 yards. You know, I'm kind of revealing my dog of the week early, but I'll get there. But, man, props to Reggie Bush for putting it together. But I do like the Falcons. I can see why you would take them in this game. This is going to be a closely contested game. They're division rivals, but I got to go with the Saints at home. D. Wills.
I picked the Saints to win the division, so I'm going with the Saints.
All right. And we got the Rose Bowl. January 2nd, college football games. We got the Rose Bowl, Wisconsin versus Oregon. Man, I usually don't do this, but I'm going to go against the home team, and I'm going with the Oregon Ducks. I think the speed is going to be a problem. The same way TCU gave the Badgers a problem, I think Oregon is going to give the Badgers a problem. It'll be a close game. It'll be a tight battle, but speed kills. D. Wills, who you taking?
You got to come to me, man.
Oh, this is a killer.
Yeah, I agree. Speed kills. The defensive front, man, makes me nervous for the Badgers. They just haven't gelled the way I wanted them to. I got to just go with Bucky, though. I got to roll with him. I know it's going to come back to haunt me, but I got to roll with Bucky.
Oh, yeah, it's going to come back to haunt you for sure.
Yeah, I already know that.
Phil T, you took Wisconsin. Explain yourself, brother.
Going with the Badgers, they have the best player on the field. He's Russell Wilson. I think he has a signature game.
Mm.
And because of this, we started looking at him as a potential first or second round pick.
That's what
I'm down.
I put it on Russell.
I'm down. And let me just say, man, Monty Ball got robbed. Let me just throw that out there real quick, man. I mean, Trent Richardson is the better running back. I'll give him that. Trent is a really talented dude. And if I'm a team with a top five pick in the first round of the NFL draft in April, I want Trent Richardson on my team. All right?
I want
But Monty Ball had one of the best seasons by a running back ever. And barely got any real consideration for the Heisman at all. I'm disappointed. But I digress.
I already got my – you got the SEC bias. I see a Big Ten bias on a lot of stuff. I'm going to leave it alone.
All right, next game, Fiesta Bowl, Stanford versus Oklahoma State. D. Wills, who you taking?
Damn, this is like the pea soup and carrots bowl. it's hard to pick. It's just too. I gotta go Oklahoma State. I've been dogging them all year.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'm gonna say Oklahoma State. They did that thing this year. Explosive. I just think they're gonna have a lot going on.
D. Wills is taking Oklahoma. I mean, PhD is taking Oklahoma State as well. Explain yourself, brother.
Who cares? I mean, you know. It's just. I like the uniforms.
Yeah. I'm going with Stanford on this one, man. I think this is time for Andrew Luck to have a big game. He's had a couple opportunities to have a signature game this year, and it really hasn't happened. I think this is his last opportunity to have one of those games in his career. He's already said he's coming out. Everybody knows he's coming out. So I think this is it for him. So I'm picking him to have a great game and for the guys in the red and white to take it to the guys in whatever color.
They decide to wear on that day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So now, NBA game, Christmas Day, the Miami Heat at the Dallas Mavericks, opening the season up, dropping the banner in Dallas, or raising the banner in Dallas, ring ceremony and everything. The Heat and Dallas are going to meet up. The Heat are going to have to watch it all. It's going to be a beautiful thing. The Heat are coming in. They still, to me, haven't solved their problems in the middle. I guess they're going to roll with Joel Anthony and Udonis Haslam. I mean, and whatever they get out of Eddie Curry.
You forgot Big Eddie. Eddie Wiswell.
The problem is Big Eddie. We need not so Big Eddie.
2020.
So,
10-10. 5-5, man.
Oh, man. So that's where the Heat are. Dallas also is trying to replace a key cog in losing Tyson Chandler. Brenda Haywood is going to try and do what she can do in the post. I mean, Brendan is going to do what he can do in the post. You know, they got Lamar Odom in town. Him and Chloe bought a new crib in Dallas. You know, they bothering the neighbors with their quirky habits and everything. Vince Carter's in town. You know, so we're going to see how this goes. Dallas has got some meshing to do. The Heat, I think, are pretty well meshed. The pieces that they added on don't need to ball a whole lot. We're going to see how this goes. Dallas has got a lot of guys who, if they had this team maybe 5-6 years ago, you'd be like, damn, they got a squad. With Jason Kidd and Sean Marion and Vince Carter and Lamar Odom and Dirk Nowitzki. And so this team on paper 5 years ago would have been a super squad. Right now, they're very good, though. So, Phil T, you took the Heat. Why?
I don't think the Heat will lose more than 7 or 8 games this year.
You want to put that on record?
No, I say that kind of iffy. But I don't think they lose many games this year. And like you said, watching this team again celebrate in front of you, I mean, I can already see the headlines the next day. LeBron and D Wade, you know, go to the bathroom or like they're not on the floor when the Mavericks get the ring. You know, I mean, I can already see the story. These jokers is gonna come out and do their thing, and you crack me up when you say, I guess they're gonna roll with Joel Anthony. They got enough.
All right, D Wills, who are you taking?
The ring ceremonies always go against that home team. It's just too much champagne flowing in the Heat. And I said that last year, I said, the reason why I pushed back on the Heat because I felt like they needed to go through something where they went through something. This season, you're going to notice my comments about them going to change this year. But I feel like they don't got a little bit of that rough edge. They don't been through. They don't got knocked around a little bit. I think they're going to be real focused. And I think they're gonna get in them coming out this first game. So I say the Heat gonna do it just because it's a celebration night. I think Dallas is gonna get better as they go.
Yeah, I'm going with the Heat as well. I too look at the Heat differently this year. Last year I didn't have a whole lot of expectations for the team. I thought they would be good. I thought the championship talk was premature. They got further than I anticipated they would get. I didn't think they would get to the finals. They made it to the finals. They lost in the finals. This year, I expect a lot from them. You know, I think it always takes a team a year or two to get everything as far as that season, that proper seasoning. You know, last year we talk about guys who ain't been through nothing. Bosh hadn't been out of the first round. You know, a lot of those guys hadn't been there in key moments. Hadn't gone through tough series. So, you know, I think that's changed for sure. So, I like the Heat in that game. Next game, Celtics at the Knicks. The Knicks add Tyson Chandler to their roster, gives them a presence inside, possibly one of the better front lines in the league. They still have some issues as far as the backcourt, figuring out who's going to fill in their backcourt. But they got Carmelo. They got Amari, two of the top scorers in the league returning. The Celtics got some real bad news. They lose one of their young pieces, one of their only young players who are worth anything right now, and that's Jeff Green, to a heart issue. Former Georgetown Hoya, wish him well. Hopefully he recovers and can get back on the court. You know, the Celtics have picked up a lot of guys, a lot of spare parts. They're still rolling in with their big three plus one with Rondo. So, Phil T, you took the Celtics. I'm actually going with the Knicks. I think the Knicks can push the pace. I don't know if the Celtics got some running in them at all. But I'm trending towards the Knicks being a little bit better than advertised this year. A little bit better than they were last year, and I think they may sneak into the top three of the East. D. Wills, who you taking?
I've been going back and forth, and then I kind of heard you talk. You might have swayed me. But, I think the Celtics are going to win this one. And the reason why, I think those spare parts they have are going to create the kind of energy they had when they went on their title run. It's going to take a little bit for it to gel. I'm definitely Green not being there is clouding it a little bit, but I like Wilcox. I like Bass. I just like some of the battlers they got coming in there to go along with the other vets. And I just think, you know, Doc gonna have them ready. And I think the Knicks have it, but I don't think they don't have the defensive principles. They have the defensive players, so they have Chandler, but I don't know if they have the coach that is enforcing the kind of thing that they'll need to do to beat the Celtics. And that's the part that I gotta see, because I haven't seen that with a D'Antoni team. So it's one thing to get Chandler. It's another thing to put together the principles that require people to do the things that help you win tough series.
All right. So that is our pick six for the week. Now we go into the dog of the week, brought to you by Resistance Digital. We have our dogs of the week.
Be a dog.
Okay.
We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
All right, so dog of the week, D. Wills. Who you got for your dog of the week?
Well, you know I want to yell Reggie. I'm not going to take your thunder, so I'm going to go with Romy Hooker-Nell.
All right.
To get Kansas City to wake up and play, I heard people calling this possible trap game, but to really resurrect them, I mean, they just didn't have anything going to do it. I got to give him, you know, this is a time when people are thinking about golf, quitting, thinking about other things, and he got this team to kind of pull it together and make some plays. So I'll go with that.
All right. And then, Phil T, your dog of the week.
I watched SportsCenter for an hour this afternoon or this early evening, and I did not hear Tim Tebow mentioned once. So, for that reason, my dog of the week is Bill Belichick, his coaching staff, for putting together a plan to beat the Broncos.
All right. Yeah, props to them for ending that mess. Enough was enough, all right? People were starting to think this dude is actually a good quarterback. He's not as horrible as we thought he would be, all right? I thought he would be an abject failure as a starting quarterback. He ain't that bad, but let's not make this dude out to be anything other than just okay. You know, God didn't help him this week, so. My dog of the week is Reginald Bush. Reggie, where have you been? I mean, about to eclipse 1,000 yards rushing, averaging 5 yards a pop, six rushing touchdowns. He's not catching the ball as much as he has in the past. I think that's more system, but he can run. Reggie can run. Reggie can run the ball.
And ran me right to the championship. Run, Reggie, run.
See, I had him on the bench, and if I hadn't had him on the bench, I would be playing in two championships instead of one. But it's all good, Reggie. I ain't mad at you. You had a great game.
I believed in you, Reggie. I believed in you.
You did. You believed in him when no one else did. That is absolutely true. You believed in that brother when no one else did.
I still remember people at draft day looking at me like, what?
That's when you took him in like the fifth round.
I was like, come on. And I was doubting. I was about to drop him on several weeks. I just said, no, I'm going to hold on. Faith.
Yeah, that's how I acquired him, man. Somebody dropped him. I said, I'm going to go ahead and get this cat a flyer. And I hung on to him. He had a couple good weeks for me. But, yeah, props to Reggie Bush. 200 yards is nothing to – nothing to sneeze at. Six touchdowns this year. Man, career year for Reggie. He needed that. As Drake said, I need that. So that's all for this week, folks. That's the show. Thanks for listening. This is the After Hours section of the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. Check you later. Peace. See you on the 3rd. See you on the 3rd. January 3rd. See you then. Take care.
Listen to the RSG Classic next week.
Oh, yeah.